Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Mike Boris, and this is Straight Talk.
All we do is train, eat, sleep, and this is my first actual interview that I've done for, you know, months.
Wow. George Kambosos, welcome to Straight Talk, mate. Good right hand, George. Let's get into it. So, what's the date in May?
May 12th.
May 12th.
Kambosos Lomachenko doesn't really get bigger than this. Lomachenko, that's the guy I've wanted for a long time, a guy that I've always, and I've been obsessed with fighting. And here we are. Styles make fights. Mm. I see the holes. I see the mistakes he makes. I truly believe I can be the first person to stop this guy. I'm obsessed.
George Kambosos, and the takeover went down. Doesn't get much bigger than this.
Will you go after him?
I'm going to go after him, but we have a very good game plan as well. And
you're not going to tell me, though.
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, mate. George Kambosos, welcome to Straight Talk, mate.
It's good to be back. Good to see you.
Good to see you again, mate.
Looking forward to
been a long time, mate.
Another great chat. Yeah, it has been a while, but a lot has happened.
And totally.
And we're obviously preparing for the next big one.
Let's get into it. So what's the date in May?
May 12th.
May 12th?
May 12th, RSA Arena, Perth, Australia, another mega fight. Kambosos Lomachenko. It doesn't really get bigger than this. Obviously, the other big fight when you compare is me and Devin Haney at Marvel Stadium. So I've been very blessed, but I've showed the boxing world the power that I have to bring these big stars out to Australia.
And it's pretty important from Australia's point of view because we don't – I mean, UFC's done a little bit of it. They've given us a fight in Perth, one in Sydney. You've given us a fight in Melbourne, and we want to see the next one in Perth. And it's really important for Australia to get the content, like – actually to enjoy it. Why does George Kambosos, why is he so interested in making sure that Australia gets to see these fights on our own soil?
I think when it all comes down to it, I think it's legacy. I think for me, when I look at it, I say, when it's all said and done, I'll say Kambosos not only fought the best, but he was able to bring these big megastars. We're talking megastars, Lomachenko, future Hall of Famer, megastar. Devin Haney, another megastar, brought him to Australia twice. So being able to bring these guys to Australia is something that I can look back, obviously, in the future and say, we brought him here. But again, it gives Australian boxing a platform. At the moment, the game is quite messed up. They're not getting the big, big fights. And for me to be able to do this and bring these big stars here shows Australian boxing still has a lot of respect. The fans get behind it and they support real boxing.
How hard is it to get the fighters to come here and fight you on your turf, like in Australia? I mean, is it a difficult thing? Like, what's the negotiation look like?
Look, the negotiation obviously is always extremely heavy. I try to take a step back from the negotiation. My father, manager Jim Kambosos, is when it comes to negotiating, especially with the Americans, he's a bull. Like, there is no one better. He knows how to make these things happen. He knows how to make sure we get what we want, but also bring these megastars here. So it is not an easy thing, but again, we are very fortunate where I have a very big name here. I have a massive fan base. And from a promoter's perspective, they say, okay, Kambosos knows how to fill out a stadium or an arena. Lomachenko or Devin Haney, good big names too. It just makes sense.
So you talked about legacy a moment ago, and you know, you've been down. Like, I remember when you used to fight at Luna Park when George Kambosos, real little young fella.
Yeah.
And in fact, me and my sons used to have, I remember going there many years ago, and I can't remember who you fought now.
Brandon Ogilvie, Luna That's Park.
Right. Yeah.
It was a big fight because it was 1 versus 2 in Australia. He was top 10 in the world. I was top 15 in the world. So there was a lot of bad blood. Rivals from the amateurs. We had fought each other in the amateurs. So it was the young George Kambosos.
He's very aggressive.
Very aggressive, very hot-headed.
Yeah.
Still very aggressive and hot-headed to a point. But again, I'm very, I'm smarter now. I'm wiser, I'm more mature. But that were fun days too. You know, I look back and sometimes watch them fights and say, well, you know, we did that. We packed out Luna Park. I think, 3,000-4,000 people?
Yeah, it was packed.
Some of these shows here in Australia with big names still don't do that kind of numbers. So we've always had the numbers. We've always had the people behind me in the fan base that want to see Kambosos fight. And that's one thing. When George Kambosos fights, it's excitement, it's entertainment, and people want to see, okay, this is a real fight.
Can I just quickly, not everybody's probably heard our podcast before. We've done a couple, but I just quickly want to, for those who haven't heard about George Kambosos, just talk a little bit about you for a second. Grew up in Sydney.
Yep.
So whereabouts in Sydney? Southwest it's not quite southwest these days. I mean, it's around the St. George area.
Yeah.
Tell us where you grew up.
St. George, Sutherland Shire area. I was bullied, obviously, as a young kid.
You were a bit overweight too?
Overweight, fairly overweight. I was about 60 kilos at that 10, 11 years of age. So used to play park footy, Gymnie Gorillas. And we got to the point where the off-season came and my old man, who's, you know, always in my corner, been in my corner from young, he said, look.
This is Jimmy.
Jimmy, he goes, we've got to do something in the off-season. We live close, not too far from Cronulla. Let's do some nippers. I think he was just trying to test me. I said, no, no chance. He goes, look, you like the Rocky movies? How about some boxing? We went down to the PCYC. From the first day, just fell in love with the sport. Lost 16 kilos, got down to like 44 kilos. By the time lost that weight, my boxing improved, my rugby league improved. So Sharks Development Squad came around, made it there, but also started having amateur fights and made the New South Wales team. So we got to the point where my father would always say the crossroads would come and you're going to have to choose and put all your eggs into one basket. And when I look back now, I'm very happy and I know I made the right decision of putting everything into being a boxer and a professional fighter and knowing that one day I would become world champion.
It's funny, you know, like you look a lot more scary than you are really. I mean, what I mean by that is obviously you're a skillful professional sports person
yep.
and a boxer at that, which means you know how to handle yourself. But you've got tats all over you. You know, when you're in the ring, especially when you're a young kid, you know, boxing at Luna Park, you're an aggressive bugger. I mean, I remember seeing you, you know, you used to sort of move around the ring. Me and my sons, we used to love seeing him because you brought a lot of energy to the fight game. But George Kambosos is actually a pretty placid sort of dude, family man, love your wife and kids, committed to your craft, train hard, work hard for your family, make good money for your family, provide for your family, et cetera. How does George balance up the George Kambosos you have to be when you're in the ring, you're fighting, you know, Teofimo Lopez, you know, Haney, all really aggressive guys, Vasily Lomachenko, like, you know, a veteran. He probably won't be happy with me calling him a veteran, but like, you know, a veteran fighter.
Yeah.
Like a boxer, but a fighter.
Yeah.
How do you be that guy in the ring, be that guy when you're training, sparring, but then be the dad and George Kambosos, the good dude?
I think it's very important to be able to switch. You know when you got to turn it on. You know when you come to work doing anything, you got to, you know, get to work. You know what you have to do. But when you get home, you know how to switch off. You know
which one's the switch though, George? Like is it you switch I to think, George at home or do you switch to George the fighter?
I think I've known boxing more than what I've known being a father. Obviously, I've got 3 beautiful kids, but my eldest is Avalia, who's 6 and a half, turning 7. I've been a fighter for nearly 20 years. So being a fighter is something that's first nature to me. I think that's first when it comes to having to switch to being a father. And it's no one gives you a plan to, you know, when you have your first kid or second kid, there's no blueprint. There's no, this is what you got to do. You just got to kind of just see what works. And when you're a fighter and you're full time training 2-3 times a day and you're a big name like a guy like myself, and you got the social media and you got everything else that's going on, you need to find the right balance. You got to have that time management and you got to be able to switch. Now, I think I switch better when I go home and I turn everything off, and I try to spend as much time with my kids, show them what dad does, but as well give them the lessons and how to be disciplined to achieve something. But again, give them their time as well and show, listen to them, what they want to do, what games they want to play. It can't always be boxing. And I have been obviously my worst enemy when it comes to that too. Sometimes I have brought it home and things happen on Twitter and social media, or something's not going right with negotiations, and I bring that home, and these kids don't understand. But I've learned as I've got older and more mature to, you know, try to split both. And when I step inside my gym, it switches. You know, I go back to what's natural to me as a fighter, as a guy who's, you know, relentless, you know, in the fight game, the way I train, you've seen the way I train, I'm obsessed. I don't think there's ever been a harder trainer in this country, maybe in the world, the way I train. You know, coaches can't believe the way I'm so obsessed and put in that hard work. You know, this is, you know, everything for me, but I'm able to switch back, and it's a good thing when I get back home.
Yeah, that balance is really important. Do you think you could have done that when you were, say, 19, 20, and at the age of 19 or 20 years of age? Let's say, you know, you had met your wonderful wife and you decided to have kids at a much earlier age. Not that you're old, but at a much earlier age, do you think you would have been in a position to switch? And what is it that helps you mature? I mean, what are the things, has it been things you've had to overcome that's helped you mature? Or is it looking at your dad and your mom or as uncles, or is it just the whole Greek cultural thing about how important family is? What are the things that have helped you learn how to switch and get that balance right?
I think just practice over time. Obviously, a whole, you know, mix of everything. You know, seeing other people, see how they do it. Learning, you know, great, you know, principles from Manny Pacquiao when I was with him. That guy would come from the Senate all day, come and train, then go home and be a family man to his, you know, four or five kids. You know, learning from different people. You know, seeing how, obviously my parents are split now, but seeing how they were back in the day. Just learning, but also my own, you know, mix of things that I've experienced and just seeing what works, you know. But if you ask a 19, 20-year-old George Kambosos trying to deal with that, it would be a lot different. But we only had my daughter when I was in 22, 23. So it was just after that fight at Luna Park where we found that, okay, Mrs. is pregnant, Beck's pregnant. There's a baby on the way, and it changes everything. It gives you, for me, a lot of people worried, okay, this might be the end now. This might be distracting. This might be something that's going to put his, you know, energy into a baby and being a family. But really, it motivated me even more. It gave me that extra drive that, okay, now I've got another mouth to feed. Now everything I'm doing is not now just for George Kambosos. It's for George Kambosos, my wife, and my daughter, and obviously then my two sons that came along. So being able to look back now and seeing the hard road that I took and being in America, and, you know, there'll be times I took my kids with me so we could be all together. And obviously everyone knows the story, or most people do, living in rundown places and, you know, struggling to make ends meet. But looking back now and saying, okay, I did that, it gave me great character to get to where I am and where I got to. And thank God that it financially paid off as well, where I know that my kids are set, their kids are set from my hard work and that sacrifice. So I think it gave me that extra drive. You know, when you have kids, it's a whole different level.
You mentioned Manny Pacquiao, and a lot of people forget that you were sparring with Manny Pacquiao, and I don't know whether he was your spar partner for your fights or whether you were his spar partner for his fights. Maybe you can clear it up, but you spent a lot of time with Manny. What do you learn from a bloke like him? What did you learn about boxing, I'm talking about? What did you learn from a bloke like him in terms of, like, dude's a superstar,
yeah.
One of my favourite fighters of all time because he's a left-hander, but just one of my favourite fighters of all time. He's, you know, like the amount of punches he threw and, you know, how he moved and his fitness levels and, you know, how he trained, et cetera. What did you learn from Manny?
Look, again, yeah, Manny Pacquiao, ultimate legend, you know. Massive name in the world of boxing. And when you look back, yes, I was there as his sparring partner, but I think I was using him as a sparring partner too, because I was trying to get as much you know, knowledge and lessons from a guy like that, a guy who's done it all. You know, 13 world titles, 8 divisions. It's something that I look back and say, wow, that actually happened. Gave me great experience as well. Learning from him, obviously the boxing side, of course, you're going to learn so much from how, the way he trains. One thing he did say is, I love having you with me because the way you train reminds me of a young Manny Pacquiao. You train extremely hard like he did back in the day and obviously like he was at that stage. But time management as well, seeing how he controlled everything the way he was able to, like I said, go from politics, working all day in the Senate, he's a senator, come to the gym with his suit and tie and take it off, put the wraps on, and then we start training, start sparring, and then early morning, back on the road, running, get his rest, eat. And again, he's got so much going on, but he balanced everything really well. And he'd always say it, and people would ask him the same question. I would listen. I'm very observant and make sure that I listen to things and try to soak up as much as I can. And he would say it, time management. People would ask him, how do you do this, Manny? How do you do, you find your time? He goes, I have the right time management. I know exactly what works. And that's what I've been able to do in my career.
So spar partner is really important. You know, you've got Vasily Lomachenko coming up in May. He's a certain, and people say styles win fights. Mm. He's a certain style of fighter. Maybe we just dig into that style of fighter that he is now. Different to Lopez, definitely different to Haney.
Yep.
Haney's like the pretty fighter, you know, not putting him down, but he's a pretty fighter and he fights different. Lomachenko's, I would say, not dirty fighter, but like fights to win, you know, like he knows how to wrestle, he grabs holds. Push around a
great
little bit.
Footwork.
Good footwork. And he's a bit, as you know, as you said before, he's a bit smaller than you, but he sort of can get under you a little bit. He's probably going to test your patience. How do you prepare for that? Like, where do you get your spar partner? Because Australia doesn't have a lot of good sparring partners. I mean, that's the problem. It's a big problem here. That's why a lot of fighters have to go to America and stuff like that. What do you do?
I'm very fortunate in this time of my career where I have – the financials to be able to bring the best guys here. I got a very good sparring partner from Russia at the moment here. We sparred yesterday. We've been sparring twice a week. He's had over 400 amateur fights, undefeated as a professional as well. And this guy is Lomachenko 2.0. He's giving me fantastic work. And that's all you got to do. You got to get the right guys.
How do you find him? I mean, how the hell do you find this guy?
I'm very fortunate again. I have a very good head coach, great lead coach who I've been working for many months. Anton Kadushin, who's the head national Olympic coach for Russia. And this guy knows that style. That's his bread and butter. And when it comes to not only knowing the style, but having the right sparring partner, that's one thing I've lacked in the past where we couldn't get the right sparring partners. But now, as soon as the fight was obviously getting worked on, straight away, okay, we need this guy. I got him. I got this guy. And we get the visas ready, we get the applications done, and obviously it's not easy as well. Jim Kambosos has a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure these guys get into the country. We know that trying to bring someone from Russia with this current stage in the world that we are is not the easiest thing in the world, but we get them here. They're here for a job, and they give me the great work.
So so you got the Russian coach and you got the Russian spar partner.
Yep.
And you've got a Russian opponent coming up.
Ukrainian.
Well, sorry.
And by the way,
I've got to apologise for that. You're right. And he did pull out of fighting for a while when the war first started.
We were supposed to fight.
Correct. I remember
when
that.
When I had all the belts, undisputed champion of the world, first ever Australian undisputed, 4 belt. And then myself, Lomachenko, Devin Haney, we're all in the mix. Who's going to fight Kambosos, the big fight here in Australia? Possibly Gervonta Davis. Obviously, I wanted to fight the best guys, and that shows the balls that I got. The guy that Kambosos beats Lopez, top 3 pound for pound in the world, most feared guy in division, and one of the most feared punches, you know, in boxing. Kambosos goes and shocks the world, beats up Lopez, takes all his belts, comes back. Obviously, my promoter starts to send, okay, some names. Let's fight this guy. Let's fight that guy. Some easy names. Let's make some easy money. I said, no. You send these lists back. These are the 3 names that I want. Vasily Lomachenko, Devin Haney, Gervonta Davis. That's the 3 names that Kambosos will fight. Now, Gervonta Davis was never going to come to Australia. He's on his high horse. He thinks he's king shit, so forget him. But Lomachenko, yes, I'll take the fight. Devin Haney, yes, I'll take the fight. And then it went down to negotiating. And at that stage, Lomachenko's Duel was very easy to make, being with Top Rank. The fight was pretty much set. And all of a sudden, he had signed his part. I was about to sign my part. Woke up early in the morning, and my phone was going crazy. I've opened my phone, and I've seen a million messages, a million phone calls, and I've seen a photo of Vasily Lomachenko with the army gear, and everyone's saying that he's gone back to Ukraine to do whatever he did. Now, at that stage, okay, let's find out what's going on. He's out. Devin Haney jumps in. So there was a contract for me and Vasily Lomachenko to fight at Marvel Stadium in front of, I think we probably would have done even bigger numbers than 45,000. But again, 45,000 was amazing. And that was the fight to be. I think style-wise, that fight would have been a different kind of fight. But again, I'm very blessed to have gone and fought a guy like Devin Haney, given him the opportunity, set him up as well, and been able to, you know, learn things from that fight. And again, and being with such a pure boxer like himself as well. So it's funny how things turn around. And after the Haney fights, I always said to myself, I pray to God that I get my shot one more time and do it 100% right, and I get Lomachenko. That's the guy I've wanted for a long time, a guy that I've always, you know, been obsessed with fighting, a guy that I really wanted to fight. And there was even word of me and him fighting back in 2019. So third time lucky, here we are.
So how would you describe Lomachenko's style?
Lomachenko's style is quite similar to when it comes to being aggressive, being sharp, try to come forward. Quite similar to myself. I think my footwork and defense is quite underrated. And again, I think his defense is quite overrated, but his footwork is great as well. He's a dancer. Styles make fights. Mm. I see the holes. My team sees the holes. And this is why I wanted this fight for a long time. I see the mistakes he makes. And I truly believe I can be the first person to stop this guy.
So you wouldn't... He's not really a counterpuncher, although he does counterpunch, but he moves forward.
He's more of a mover, but he does dance as well. He likes to move backwards, bring you on.
Yeah.
He's got that high guard. But again, he's so been brought up in the amateur system, two-time Olympic gold medalist, three-time amateur world champion, three-division world champion, unified champion. This guy has all the accolades. This guy is a future Hall of Famer, first ballot. So that's why I've been saying, when I beat this guy and I have Lopez on my resume and Lomachenko on my resume, and then I've gone the distance with Devin Haney, I fought the guys like Mickey Bay, Lee Selby, and all these other guys, I cement my spot into the Hall of Fame in boxing already at 30 years of age. So we know what Lomachenko brings. We respect him, but that's where it ends. When we step inside that ring, it's a whole different story. And I truly believe, like I said, I'm going to be the first person to stop him.
Will you go after him?
I'm going to go after him, but we have a very good game plan as well. And
you're not going to tell me that.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, mate.
But we have an amazing game plan. Look, my issue has been, I've gone into these last few fights. That Lopez fight had a great game plan. I had game plan A all the way to, you know, the end of the alphabet. But then I went into the Haney fights with just this ego of, who's Devin Haney? I'll knock this guy out. I'll beat this guy, no problem. I'll do whatever media. I'll go see every single media outlet and do my interviews, and let's promote the fight like crazy, and let's train when after that or before that. And before you know it, it all leads to, you know, something that's not the way you're supposed to prepare for a fight, the way you're supposed to train for a fight. So there are mistakes being made. And again, yeah, Devin Haney, he beat me. Congratulations. He's a great guy. We talk all the time now. He's really progressing to that superstar status. And I'm happy for, you know, giving him that opportunity, because a lot of guys didn't want to fight him. But it's come around full circle where I've been blessed with a very good team, and all we do is train, eat, sleep. And this is my first actual interview that I've done for, you know, months.
Wow.
Press conference we did, obviously, in Perth. We continued our training over there, did what we had to do, come back. We have not done anything except for train, eat, sleep. And this is the first when obviously you and your team reached out. I said, of course, for Mark, I'll definitely do it. But we have been very, you know, obsessed and putting in work.
Because you do strike me, George, as an obsessed sort of person in terms of your craft.
Yep.
And by the way, if you're jumping in the ring, for anyone who's never jumped in the ring, if you're not obsessed with your preparation, then you're probably going to get towed.
Yeah, you have to.
Because there's no half measures. You've got to be 100%.
Look, when we look at my accolades and what I've been able to achieve and 6 world titles, you know, every belt in the game, bring these mega fights here, these big fights, win the big fights. Obviously, yeah, you lost a couple of the big fights, but we're back in that position. You have to be obsessed. And again, at 30 years of age, a lot of people would say, well, you know what? Why do you work so hard? You've done it all. You've made the money. You've got the house. You've got the toys. You've got your family. Why do you continue to risk it? I go, because one, I love this sport. I just got so much energy for this sport. I'm so obsessed by this sport. I continue to learn every day. But again, it goes back to the legacy. And people say, oh, you know, you see people, oh, this is a money grab. This is for him to make some more money or whatever. And Lomachenko the same. And so, no, this is two guys that are really hungry for the next step of their career. You know, and like I said at the press conference, we've both been there. We've done it all. But this is now who moves on to the next spot, who goes back to number one in the world and gets to call the shots again and gets to bring more mega fights. You know, my plan is to beat this guy and bring more big fights here to Australia or go back to the US like I have. Go fight back in New York or Las Vegas and beat these great fighters.
It's funny, you know, George, I'm listening to you and I'm watching you and I'm actually looking at your eyes. And one of the things I noticed when you fought Lopez, when you walked into the ring, I think I might have messaged you, but I could see it in your eyes.
Yeah.
You had a look. And I usually, you know, that look is very important. Yeah. I mean, and I don't want to over egg it, you know, I mean, the eye of the tiger, whatever. But you had a look. I thought when I saw you walk in the ring, when I saw your eyes, I thought, he's going to win this.
Yeah.
I didn't know how, whatever. I didn't know you're going to put the big right on him, you know, the big overhand, the old Mick Ackaway right hand, bang. Well, there are lots of blokes who do, but that was.
I've been throwing that shot for many years, amateurs, and then we literally, you can land that first shot, and we've seen guys that knock people down in the first round, second round, and then all of a sudden they go to shit because you kept doing it though. But then I landed that, but I was also landing my left hooks, my double, triple jabs, the left hooks, everything that was landing, and I just broke this guy down. Then again, yeah, I lost my composure in that round 10, but snapped out of it, and then come 11 and 12, which are probably the two greatest rounds in Australian boxing, where Kambosos showed his real, you know, strength and honour and who he is and was prepared for anything, and came home and brought them belts back to Australia.
I look at you though, George, and look at your eyes now. You're very clear. You're not very marked up.
I've got the scars.
You've had a lot of fights. You've had a lot of sparring, obviously. Yeah. You've had a lot of fights. But your speech is good.
Yeah.
But what do you put that down to? Why do you think that – I mean, I – not a lot of fighters, and sometimes at 30, having the amount of fights that you've had, you've had a lot of amateur fights, you've fought for a long time, they just not quite as articulate as you and or look a bit more marked up. What do you put that down to? I mean, how does George keep himself in this sort of good position? That you keep yourself sort of really composed physically and also the way you speak.
I think when Kambosos talks, you see it in the press conferences, you see it when I do interviews, I'm very articulate, I'm very sharp with what I do. And again, I'm in the ring, I'm extremely sharp. You know, my defense is very underrated. You know, guys that come to spar me for the first time, you know, can't believe that they struggle to hit me. I glance a lot of shots, I catch a lot of shots, I slip and roll a lot of shots. You know, I've taken the big shots as well. Of course, this is fighting. These are two guys throwing punches at each other. You're going to take shots, but I look after my body very well outside of training.
So what's your regime look like? So in terms of food, you're talking about what you eat?
Food, recovery. I got an infrared sauna at home. I got Normatec boots at home. I got ice baths at the gym. I got everything to make me be at 110%. Like I've always said, you can't put, you know, basic fuel in a supercar. I can't put basic fuel in my supercar, so I need to make sure that everything is done properly. And
sleep?
I think sleep is very important.
Do you sleep well?
I sleep well. Even with three kids, I sleep extremely well. I still have my midday naps. Like once we finish this, I will go home. I'll eat my scheduled food that I got to eat. I'll go sleep for an hour and a half. I get up, go back to the gym. I finish training. I do my recovery, go home. Eat well, and then back to bed, restart in the morning.
You don't drink?
Don't drink.
Outside of your training, prep, don't drink much or ever?
Once in a blue, every 2 years. Yeah. You know, it's very like to celebrate and just enjoy, but I don't get no thrill from it, to be honest.
Yeah.
My thrill is living a clean life, training, being obsessed with the sport and winning the big fights. So if you see me do have one drink or two drinks, it'd be once every 2 years or once every 3 years. I can't even remember the last time I had a drink. So that is an important factor, the right way you eat. You don't do the bad things outside of the sport. You don't get caught up too much in the lights. A lot of guys, even that say they won't drink, but they want to be out in the clubs and in the parties and, look at me and I'm the champ. And, you know, I became undisputed and didn't even celebrate. You know, I went straight back into hard work.
I remember
That's a true warrior. And there'll be time to enjoy life, you know, and when I'm 34, 35, 36, it's okay. It's the boxing has come to an end. You can't fight forever. Now you can look to help the next future. Obviously, we've got the promotional company. We've got a lot of big plans. But again, you can enjoy yourself. You know, sit here and have a drink. I know you got your new drink. So we could sit here and have a drink. But for now, it's full focus on one plan, Eye of the Tiger, and continue to beat these best guys.
When I think it through, George, I mean, probably a really good example right now is Ryan Garcia.
Yep.
I mean, like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, it's weirding me out. Like, I thought to myself initially maybe, you know, he's just trying to get a bit of attention perhaps because he's, you know, he's big on his various social mediums. But then I thought, no, that, you know, like the whatever the equivalent of the Combat Commission is over there, they're looking at even postponing and or doing an examination of his mental health.
New York State Athletics, you know, commission who are extremely strict. I've gone through their system to fight 2 times, especially when I fought Lopez, and they are extremely strict. So they're seeing all this and say, okay, we'll give you first chance, second chance, but they see the continuous of it. And again, yeah, all right, he might be playing it a bit, but there's been points where it's just like, you don't go play that stuff, you don't go say that stuff, you don't go do that stuff, and you don't go do that against a guy like Devin Haney. You know, I learned my lesson from training like an animal anyway, but doing the commitments of the media and trying to really promote a fight. And again, who was Cambosis at that stage to go and do 45,000? I'm not in the media every single day. I'm not, you know, this you know, mega superstar at that stage to promote a big fight. But we pushed hard in the media to do it. But again, I lost my way with that, not the training, but Garcia looks terrible.
Do you think he's lost his way?
I think he's lost his way. I think.
Was it pressure?
I think it could be pressure. I think he's enjoying himself in other things that you do not do.
It looks to me like something like that.
Yeah. And you see the way he's reacting. You hear things from the fight game and from people over there. And again, like I said, you don't do that against a guy like Devin Haney. Devin Haney, like the way he trains, very similar to myself, train like animals. He will beat him up.
Yeah, but that because anyway, Garcia is quick and he's got lots of things going for him.
Yes, but won't be enough.
But the whole mental piece of going into the ring against someone like Devin Haney, who's just like a surgeon, like he just bang,
he'll
just,
break him down. He'll
just keeps going, down. going. Doesn't get hit much. He's you know, he's pretty fighter to watch. Mm. Unless Ryan Garcia can put one on him really, like, you know, by surprise. I just get concerned about Ryan Garcia's ability to go through all the rounds.
Yep.
If that's really his mental state.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that the rounds, getting through them rounds, and then when he's getting tagged nonstop, it's going to be a whole different story for him. But again, I look at the outside as well. So when Ryan's doing, he's put up some shadow boxing, he looks terrible, and he's doing the pads, and his feet are everywhere, and he's trying to, like, jitter the way he's throwing his shots. He looks terrible. He looks like a novice. And I like Ryan. We spoken in the past. He actually reached out after my last fight saying, hey, let's do a big, big fight. But we already had plans with Lomachenko and fighting for another world title. So I look on the outside and all of a sudden I see his coach, who's an amazing coach, and I can see the way he's just looking down, he's doing this and he just doesn't look interested and he's just like, it's like he's stuck. He's stuck with this guy. He's committed to train the guy for the fight, but he's just, you know, not interested in knowing what's going to happen. And that's a guy, Derek James, who's trained a lot of great champions, Errol Spence as well. He did help Anthony Joshua. So this is a very renowned and respected coach. And I feel like when I see on the outside the way he's looking down and just there's a lot of things going on social media with him, showing that he doesn't look as interested, and you know, he's probably got the shits with Ryan the way he's acting.
What does it do for boxing though?
Disrespects, you know, a trainer like that.
What do you think that does for boxing? Because you know, you got the UFC trying to take boxing down. I mean, and you know, they've grown.
Never take.
But they're trying. You know, they'd like to own the audience.
Yeah.
And what do you think it does for boxing when we see Ryan Garcia sort of, you know, talking about all sorts of visions and various other things? I mean, it's a bit out there, which fair enough. I mean, everybody's entitled to be how they are, but. Yeah. Do you feel as though, does George Kambosos and, you know, Lomachenko and others feel as though they have to try and put some sensibility back into boxing as a sport, generally speaking? I mean, a good example is we've got Mike Tyson fighting a YouTuber.
Yeah.
I mean, does that, you know, I'm going to watch it because I'm just curious. I'm actually hoping Tyson kicks his ass. But I'm not sure. Mike's 58 and the other bloke
Jake's been, yeah, he's been fighting. He's
a young guy.
He's been knocking guys out and he takes it seriously. I know Jake pretty well now and he takes it very seriously. But again, it's a money spin. That's what it is. It's a money spin and I'm sure there's some rules behind the scenes. I'm sure they said, hey, let's just do this, do that. Let's you know, make some big
coins. Do you reckon they'll actually have 18-ounce gloves?
From what they said, like other people saying, but I've seen obviously Jake say no, there's no 18-ounce gloves. They'll probably put them in 12s, 10s or 12s. But yeah, again, it's a money spin. You know, it works, it makes sense. But am I going to sit there and watch it? Possibly. If I've got nothing else to do. Am I going to enjoy it and say, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is a Kambosos Lomachenko fight or a Usyk Tyson Fury fight or better be a Bivol fight. They're the big fights. They're the, you know, fights where it's like, wow, that's boxing. That's two warriors, two guys that are prepared for a big fight, two champions coming to fight each other. This other stuff is like,
distraction.
Look, Ryan's a hell of a fighter. He's a great fighter, very sharp, you know, got that snap and that power. Just the social media antics to a point, obviously you can do them, but once it gets over with what he's been doing, it makes the fight lesser than what it is, because on paper it's a huge fight, but it's been on social media. Ticket-wise, it hasn't been selling at all. When you look at a fight like myself and Lomachenko, which is pretty much sold out, then you can see the real fans enjoy real boxing. Now, I think if Ryan took a different approach before whatever else is going on in his head and just focus, I'm here to win, I'm here to show that I'm the best guy, this would have sold out real quick.
So, you know, because for me, I hate to see boxing lose its status as the beautiful art. To me, that's what it is. It's art. I mean, and a good example of that is recently with Anthony Joshua, when he put that right hand on Ngannou. Like, that's the beauty of boxing. If you know how to box and you can pick your spot and you see, you know, you're watching what's available for you. And Anthony Joshua putting it straight on his chin like that, he hit him a few times, but the big one, the big hit, that's the beauty of boxing. It was sweet. Like,
it was nice as a fighter, as a boxer.
Yep.
It was as much, I love Ngannou's, you know, what he's gone in to do this and from the UFC. And I love the UFC guys, obviously close friends, a lot of them.
Yeah.
But there's always that competitive nature between both, because we're both fighters, but it's two different things. So seeing that was like, okay, stay in your lane, we stay in our lane. And that's what it is. Now, if Joshua went into the cage,
a bit different.
It'd be maybe a different story unless he lands that right hand again. But if Ngannou starts kicking and elbows and grabs him, it's a whole different story.
Well, then that brings me back to Lomachenko. I've watched a lot of his fights, as I've watched every one of your fights many times over. He doesn't mind sort of grabbing and pulling and twisting and a little bit of, well, let's call it like a little bit of stand-up grappling. Like a little bit, because he did do a lot of wrestling as a kid. Yeah. Like a lot of those people from that part of the world, they all do it.
They wrestle,
And they're good at it, which is the reason why those Dagestanis are so bloody good. They're all coming out of the Soviet environment. They learn this sort of stuff. And Lomachenko's old man, his dad was a wrestler or taught him wrestling or something along those lines, something like that.
I believe his dad put him in ballet for the feet. I'm sure, there's been wrestling there. But like you're saying, you can see when he gets close and he gets tagged with a few shots and he does hold, he likes to try to punch from the hold. He tries to throw shots. And again, a lot of them shots go behind the head. Now, of course, that's one of the things that we are preparing for. One thing that we know that it's not going to be a shock when he tries to do it. But again, one thing that we will speak to
the refs.
The commission and the ref and the people involved saying, hey, if he's going to do this, we're not going to have that.
Pull it up. Yeah, that's important.
Or else I'm going to start getting dirty too and I'm going to start throwing some elbows.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
But that part's important. Maybe explain that, because what a lot of people don't realise is that there are like a meeting with the officials and, you know, you can put your point forward and your coach can put your point forward and say, look, we want you to be looking out for this ref. And by the way, if you don't pull it up, then I'll end up responding, which referees don't want to have because it's a mess.
It creates a commotion and then all of a sudden things get out of hand for the referees. Yeah, before the fight, there's rules meeting. There's a meeting with a referee with both sides and they will say, Lomachenko's team might have seen something in my fights, might say, okay, he does this. That's not really part of the rules, shouldn't be throwing it, gets away with it. We are worried and that's our case. And then we will say the same thing. Well, this is our case. We don't want you throwing this shot. If you do, this is going to be our retaliation and things get out of the way. So the ref is aware of it. The commission is aware of it. Again, there's also gloves, making sure the gloves are right. They come fully sealed. His team will check. We will check. And there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes before the fight. Now, the fight is billed, obviously, Lomachenko-Kambosos. But again, when it comes to who's going to walk out first or second, it hasn't been.
You haven't decided that yet?
It hasn't been decided yet. I think it's going to come down to possibly a coin toss. And we'll go from there. But, you know, he's got his, oh, I'm a legend. I've done this. Well, I've done a lot in the sport too. You know, this is my, you know, country. I'm bringing the IBA world title, even though it's not one of the top four. The IBF's on the line. I'm rated higher than you in the IBF. I'm going to walk out second. So I think it's fair. We do, you know, the coin whoever walks out. And then it leaves the fans. Who's going to walk out? Who's going first? Who's going second? And you hear the music and it's time to go.
Why is that important to you?
It's not important to a point of, oh, it's going to make or break the fight. But I feel like it adds another dimension to the fans. Okay, who's going to walk out first or second? Creates a little bit more excitement, but as well, it's an edge. It's like, well, I'm not going to give you, you know, everything. You know, you're going to, obviously, we're going to have to see who goes first or second. It's fair, you know. So it's kind of like not an ego thing. It's like trying to get one on them.
These are the 1%.
Little battles. Yeah, less than 1%. It's the little battles. It's like the small battles. You saw in the press conference when he said, oh, you had two chances at Devin Haney. Oh, okay, yeah, correct. Yep, I did. But you had a chance at Lopez to become undisputed. You didn't do it, and I did. So there's always these little tit-for-tats, battles, 1%ers, less than 1%ers before you get to the fight, and that's a fight.
Yeah,
it's a mental game. This is not just – boxing is not just you know, physical. It's mental, spiritual, emotional. You got to control your emotions too. You know, that's one of the big things in this camp that I've been able to, you know, work on with my coaches and my lead coach, Anton, is control the emotion. Control that and you're dynamite.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Obviously, you're well and truly past the adrenaline drain, like which you would have had when you were amateur fighter. You know, the adrenaline can actually gas you.
Drain you,
doesn't matter how fit you are, your legs can go on you because of adrenaline. But how do you control your emotions before the game? What's the sort of stuff that you do? Do you pray? Do you meditate? What do you do? What do you let's say the night before, because I mean, you would get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
What's George Kambosos do?
Just obviously you hydrate well, you eat well, and you're just there with your team, and you just obviously talk game plans, but then you're trying to switch off, watch a movie, you know, relax, have a laugh. You know, you don't want it too much, you know, make your brain go crazy and just overthink it. If you're trying to overthink the fight right then and there, you have not put in the hard work in preparation. The game plan should be ready now. I'm nearly 7 weeks this Sunday out from the fight. My game plan's ready. If they told me, okay, hey, Lomachenko's outside ready to fight, I'm ready. I have game plans A all the way to the end of the alphabet. So you just try to stay relaxed, eat well. Obviously, you have to, you know, rehydrate yourself back up to a good solid weight where you're feeling good. Make sure the recovery is good. Obviously, put the Normatec boots on. Do a quick ice bath, shock the muscles, and just enjoy, relax, and know that the next day it's time for battle. You got to battle, got to war.
How much did George Kambosos walk around? Because you don't really struggle on the weight that much. You're pretty good on making
weight's always good for me. I have been able to, and one of the things we worked on leading, obviously before the fight was announced, was trying to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, add some more muscle, and I've been able to do that. So the weight is sitting a little bit heavier than what it has in the past. But I've got a proper dietitian, proper team where it's like, no, this is perfect. This is where we want you. Next week, we want you around here. The week after, we want you around here, where it's not going to be too grueling to cut down that weight. And again, I'm the ultimate pro when it comes to doing, you know, everything right. You know, for me, I don't like to leave any stone unturned. I'll do my road work in the morning, and then I go home and put the Normatec boots on and do the recovery and watch fight tape and eat well and make sure everything's done right.
But so do you go to this? Do you go and get a DEXA? Would you get DEXA? Let's say when's your prep start? 14 weeks out.
Oh, we've been preparing since January.
Yeah, so it's 5 months.
But even before that, you know, after my last fight, we started preparation. We built up. We did like a mini camp, and then we pulled it back over the New Year's. It was the first time ever I was able to, not by choice. I like to train every day, twice a day if I can. When I'm out of camp, first time, obviously, Anton, head coach, said, no. This period, 1 week, 1.5 weeks, nothing. Please, nothing. So, Anton, I'll go for a run. Sit down and do nothing. Relax, go for a fish, enjoy time with your kids and family, go down, holidays, nothing. I said, okay. He goes, please, listen to me. So I did. And I came back to the gym, incredible, fired up, hungry. And that first time in my career, having that rest, you know, gave me that extra boost. So, you know, you got to do everything, you know, correct. And then when you get into that proper last 12 weeks of camp, that's where we've been training. We've done the pre-camps. We've done the build-up. And then 12 weeks, that's full-time hard work.
At what point did you do the DEXA? So at the 12th, beginning of the 12th week?
We did, no. We done the DEXA. It was late January, early February.
Right. So that gives you your distribution of fat and muscle, everything, bone, everything?
Check everything, get sent to the dietitian, checks it, okay, we know where we're at. Then obviously he'll come as well, do skin check, physical check, and say, okay, this is the plan. Bloods as well, see what we're deficient in, what we need more of, what we can add. And then from there we say, okay, let's put the program, test it, obviously because we're not still in that 12 weeks camp. Some things might not work for me. I might say, look, I don't feel good with this. I'm too much of this. Let's take that out. And we find the right balance. And by the time we get to that 12 weeks, everything's pinpoint. You're already in great shape. You already got the game plans. You're already conditioned. And there's no need to change anything of the structure when it comes to your meals and anything that you're putting into your body.
Can you explain why it's so important to have your legs right? Because everybody thinks of boxing as being up here mostly, but I don't mean in terms of footwork, but I'm just talking about having good legs in terms of being able to take a punch, you know, get the 12 rounds out. Like, and what do you do to get your legs right, apart from road work?
Legs are extremely important, like to a point where you said, not have the legs right movement, but that, again, is the most important part of boxing. You know, I've been really able to work, especially in that pre-camp, 15 rounds of constant drills movement. This is the most footwork and legwork that I've done ever in my career. This is the most I've ran in my career. You know, 4 or 5 times a week we are running. So I came up in the, obviously, that Russian Soviet style as an amateur. And then I went to America and built my way over there and, you know, give a couple of different trainers. And now to come back to a guy that is such high level, Russian trainer, Soviet style, and have all this plus more, it's been refreshing. It takes me back to what I used to do. And it's brought, you know, so much more to my game. You know, everything is perfect. But again, when it comes to your legs got to be conditioned very well as well.
But maybe you could explain, because like maybe those have never experienced it. Like when you get hit, especially if you get flush,
your legs go. And you saw it in the Lopez fight round 10 when I got caught with a shot kind of in the back of the head. And kind of just
I got very nervous when I saw that.
Yeah, well, that was the point where it's like, okay, does he call it a day and he's done good enough, or does he get back up like a warrior? And I got up and the legs for about a minute and a bit were all over the place. And as much as your senses are there and you can see what's going on and you're fully awake, it's your legs. They're not responding and they're a bit all, it's like after you've been on a ride and your legs are all, you know, spin you around 20 times, 30 times, you're off balance. That's what it feels like. So you got to just be patient and try to hold on and control yourself to get them back. So by doing the hard work in the gym and making sure your legs are fresh and putting in the hard work on your legs, it gives you better conditioning to take a shot. When you take a shot and say it does, you know, you feel it, your legs are more conditioned to recover if you get to that point.
And a lot of less experienced fighters forget about this, but how important is it, George, maybe you just talk to me about this, but then when they get a good one on you, how important is it to understand that just go and hold on? And like, because that's part of boxing. It's not being weak. Part of boxing is
you're going
to
take a shot.
You've got to survive the rest of the round and get back to the corner.
This is a you got to.
Because everyone can get a shot.
Man to man fight, you know, and we all fighters, we all have this ego of, you got me in that round. I'm going to kill you now. Or you hit me with a good shot, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to come and, you know, try to get my shot back. It's an ego thing. It's like you could be driving here, someone takes your car spot and you know, I'm going to get you back. That's my car spot. You know, it's just, I think, a man thing. But you have to stay control, keep your cool. And that's what I've been able to really learn in this camp is, okay, you got me with a couple good shots. This is a 12-round fight. You might have got round 2, round 3. But I know in the end, I'm going to get you. So you got to stay controlled, keep your cool. And that's one thing I've been able to learn more and more in this preparation of hit me with a good shot. You're not going to get me that shot again. I've learned my lesson. And Lomachenko, I'm sure he will land a shot here and there.
Well, it's inevitable. That's
you
know,
it's inevitable. It's a fight, but I'm going to land my shots too. And let's see how he reacts when I land my sharp shots, my explosive shots. And when I make him miss his shots and I come back with my shots. So let's see how he reacts. Let's see how I react. And ultimately, it's who can dance better on the night, who can keep the cool on the night and let their hands go and perfect the game plan on the night. He will have his game plan, I will have my game plan, and you know, we will see, May 12th.
So it's not just about how you train, how you prepped, and it's not all about your mental state, but there's the other side is your corner. Explain how important the corner is. You know, like you come back, there's not much – it's hard to take stuff in at the end of the round, especially if you copped a couple. How does your corner, your new coach, man, how will he deal with the corner? Like, is it like just to say a few words? Does he just say start breathing? What's his process? Have you experienced it yet with him?
Yeah, we've been experiencing it in our training and then obviously our sparring. He's very cool, calm, collected. He's the one that's making me more cool, calm, collected and stay controlled. So he's always very controlled. He's been doing this for a long time. He's had Olympic champions, Olympic medalists, very good pro fighters. And for him, this is his bread and butter. This is what he does. This is not a second job or he goes and works, you know, all day and then he comes to the boxing gym. No, he's in the boxing gym 24/7, lives and breathes it. So for him, he's cool, calm, collected. I come to the corner, I've made a mistake in the round. He doesn't need to explain it too much because our training, our pads, our work has already been explained throughout the course of our training camp. He's just got to say a couple words and say, okay, you know the move, you know this shot, let's get to that. This is now plan B, plan C. You don't want a corner. You see a lot of corners getting their face off fighters, blah, 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 screaming, and the poor fighter's just sitting there. And
but you don't take it in anyway.
You don't take it in. The fighter's just like, whatever. It's small little keywords, things that, that motivate you, and remembering the game plan and go out and do it. You know, it sounds simple, but in a fight, when you're taking shots, it's not as simple. And then you got, you know, 45,000 people there as well, and it's not as simple. There's a lot of pressure, but you got to be composed, and that's what I'm learning more and more, to be composed. Come back to that corner, listen to his advice, listen to what he saw, he's your eyes, then get your motivation from a guy like my father, motivates him like crazy, see what the other assistant has seen, and go out there and win that round, come back and do it again.
George, can I ask you, how important is spirituality to you? As a man, as a father, as a fighter, as a son, how important is spirituality to you?
You know, you spiritual with, you say, religion is
maybe
to a point, but again, it's more spiritual of who I am as a warrior, as a fighter, as a father figure, as a figure to a lot of young kids and a lot of men and women as well, where. You know, I get so many social media messages, you know, you inspire me. Thank you so much. I've had people reach out and say, I was going to kill myself. And I've seen you inspire me and motivate me. And you know, you've given me a purpose to say, you know what, I want to train hard. I give that, you know, that push and motivation to someone. So that there is very important, but mostly for my kids, you know, my two sons, my daughter, you know. And I try to slowly put it into them, like my father did to me. I slowly, you know, like yesterday, my son's playing his iPad, he's playing a game and he's getting frustrated. He's playing this game on there and he's getting angry because he's losing. I said, he goes, oh, I can't win. I go, hey, relax. Okay, keep trying, keep doing it. You'll get it. Don't give up. And he kept doing it so he can get it. And that's little things where to him, he doesn't understand it. He just said, oh, Dad said, don't give up, win. But then again, I give him the flip side as well, where I say, are you really going to quit? You can't do it. And he goes, I'm going to do it. Oh, well, don't quit. Go. And just give him that little edge already. You know, he's only 4 or 5 years old. This is Leonidas. But
beautiful age.
I don't know. I can see that the eyes, he's got that eye as well, the eye of the tiger. And he likes to frown as well. He's got a bit of aggression. So, I don't know. We may be in the future talking about a future champion. But for now, I install little bits into him. My daughter's obviously year one. Always ask her how her days at school and keep trying hard, keep, you know, asking as many questions as you can to the teacher and never be shy to, you know, to learn more and more. And obviously my baby, he's only little. But these are the little things where people don't see. They see Kambosis fighter, aggressive tats, wants to, you know, warrior and go to war. And yes, that's one side, but then flip to the other side is, you know, very important for me to be that figure to my kids, my family. Financially support my kids, but also spiritually support them and mentally give them the best that I can. But again, as well, to the public, give them, you know, as much motivation. You know, like I said, if I can help inspire one person or, you know, go and visit, you know, I went and visited a young, sick, you know, girl. I did put on my social media who is battling really hard, and father reached out actually on a comment on Facebook and got a million comments. And I try my best to get back to everybody, and all of a sudden I see this comment. So I messaged him and said, send me a DM right now. Say, DM me, and straight away I said, where's your daughter? Sydney Children's Hospital. Okay, when's the right time for me to come? Straight away, I went out there. And they couldn't believe it. Like from a Facebook message, I saw it, went out there, and from me trying to inspire her, she actually inspired me how positive this girl is. And this girl is, you know, life support. She doesn't know if she's going to, you know, make it the next day, but she's so positive and so inspiring that it actually benefited me to a point where it's like, what am I to worry about? This young girl is fighting for her life and she's so inspiring and she's so positive. So, you know, again, we pray for her and hope she gets through this, and I'm sure she's got that warrior spirit that she will, little Dazelle. So, you know, that's the little things that make a difference.
What do you want to say to her? Tell us, say something.
I told already at the hospital, but again, just keep fighting hard. I know you're doing it tough all the time, but you're a true warrior. You've inspired me,
keep fighting hard.
Man, I can't finish off without talking about the Mighty Roosters. We both are Roosters supporters. Neither one of us are born in the eastern suburbs, but we both happen to support the Roosters. And the team loves you because they sort of bask to some extent in your achievements and your successes, and you've been out there to speak to them. And I know you follow them religiously, but a lot of times you can't get to see the games.
I would have loved to go to Vegas.
Oh, mate,
if
it was
I wasn't
unreal.
In camp, I said, I told my old man, am I almost spewing tickets? We're in camp now. Okay, you know, if we weren't in camp, we would have been in Vegas. I've been to Vegas so many times. I said we would have been there with the boys, and it's hopefully next year.
Yeah, well, but if we go to Vegas next year, I mean, hopefully they build some rules up that allow us to qualify in the rules. Hopefully, Uncle Nick can sort something out that with Peter Flanders.
Definitely.
But how important is it to you, and as a Rooster supporter, as a rugby league supporter? How important is it to you, like the way people look up to George Kambosos to win in the fights and they follow you? How important is it for you for the Roosters to do really well relative to what this is your pastime, one of your pastimes, one of your great hobbies, watching a rugby league? How important is that to you?
It's really important because for me, you know, that's, like you said, it's something that I do outside of boxing. That's something I go home and it's Friday, and obviously tomorrow we got a big game. Yeah. I know it's Hargreaves 300. So
and South.
And South, obviously, it's that rival, and, you know, Latrell Mitchell, and it's just so much, you know, going on. And, I know that Fortune can't go to the game because I'm in camp and training, and I don't want to be around too many people and, you know, chance of getting sick and stuff, especially as winter's coming. But finish training, go home, sit down, put the Normatec boots on, and just sit there and enjoy the game. And that's, for me, it gives me that, you know, bit of downtime. But again, it's like I'm having a fight watching the game because I'm pumped up and I want to see the boys, you know, do well and win, you know, every single game if they can, and bring that trophy back to the East League club and to Bondi and, you know, celebrate.
So, like, do you sit down there with your littlest boys, probably way too little, but your five-year-old boy your daughter?
And my daughter, they love it. They sit there, they got their Roosters jersey, and it was cool.
Does Jimmy come around?
Sometimes we watch the Las Vegas game together at my house. He still likes to go to the games, still a member and stuff, so he tries to get to the games as well. It was cool. My daughter had, they do jersey day at school.
Yeah.
And you got to bring in a jersey. So she left the last minute to tell us. She's coming. She goes, I got jersey day in 2 days. I said, okay, what jersey you want to wear? A Roosters jersey. I was so happy. So we went to Rebel, try to find a jersey. Couldn't find a jersey her size. So we got online, and my wife got online quickly. We've done Express, and we got one. And she was so happy to wear it. But then my son started, I want a jersey. Why is she getting a jersey? I want a Roosters jersey. So get him a jersey as well. So it's good, you know. Like I got, you know, pushed as a young age. You're Roosters, that's it. And taken to the games as a little kid with my dad, and got to see it all. Obviously, Jimmy and a couple of beers, and I'm there, this young 5-6-year-old, and, you know, watching them scream, and then I'm screaming as well. And, you know, it was some good times, good fun times. And I won't say too much of, you know, bit of biff, you know, with the old man, with other guys. So I learned from a young age, you know, that footy kind of, feeling.
George, one of the things I'm getting wound up over here from my producer, but I do want to ask you, I mean, I have to ask you this as a fellow Greek. How important is your Greek heritage to you? I mean, you know, you've got a tattoo, I can't remember what it says, or something about
Greek blood, Greek pride.
Yeah.
It's extremely important. You know, my heritage, where I come from, you know, my family's heritage is extremely important, as well as where I'm born, where I live. You know, both flags, both, you know, I'll spill blood for both flags. You know, so it's important to have that heritage behind you, but also be important to where you live and then where you're born, mix it together. And, you know, I go out and fight, you know, for both.
I can't remember now, but you've never fought in Greece, have you?
I have.
You have? Yeah, I seem to recall you did have a fight.
2019, I had a fight there before I fought Mickey Bay in Madison Square Garden. My promoter, Lou DiBella, reached out and said, hey, there's a fight in Greece. They're doing a big show. They want you a part of it. They want you to go there and fight. At that stage, my career was just still, you know, on the edges of trying to get somewhere, try to contend the status. I said, yeah, of course, this has always been a dream of mine to fight there. Let's do it. went there. It was only a very small purse, and it was more the experience of going to fight in Greece, seeing the Greek fans. They all came out to the arena. It was actually quite a decent arena, one of the old arenas they used for the Olympics in 2004. So it was you know, experience where we did that, but it's something that I'd like to do again. You know, beat Lomachenko, get that world title, and maybe go back there and do a big fight. Then bring a big fight to Sydney as well. I want to bring a big fight to Sydney, and all these other states are getting the fights. It's only fair Sydney, you know, gets behind me.
Well, George, thanks very much, mate. I will be there in Perth on May 12th. Yep. Don't worry about that, mate. I'll be yelling and screaming. You won't be able to hear me because, but I'll be yelling and screaming.
It's pretty good.
It's a great stadium.
The arena's amazing. I went and saw it. Obviously, Volk fought there with Islam, and they reckon the atmosphere was incredible. Going there and seeing it and knowing how packed out, it's going to be sold out. It's going to be incredible. Atmosphere's going to be crazy, and I can't wait. This is very focused to win this fight. We're going to win this fight.
But George, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Particularly in your prep, because it's all about the prep.
Yep.
What happens between here and the next 7 weeks. I feel quite good about seeing you. Like, I mean, it's a not great opportunity for me to have this interview with you, but probably more importantly, what it's done for me as a George Kambosos fan, which I am and always have been, is the look I'm getting from your eyes. You look relaxed, but you look sharp, and you look really well. Yeah. Good luck, mate, on May 12th.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Bring it home.
Always good to catch up with you. And bring on May 12th.
Betcha, mate.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.